Welcome to the Lucky Titan Podcast. Here you will learn how to fill your favorite platform with tons of your dream customers from some of the world's top entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Josh Tapp. Now let's get started. What's up, everybody? Josh Tapp here again, and welcome back to the summit. We're excited to have Darius Mershazadeh with us. And that one, that was a hard name to learn. I actually had to study that one a little bit.
You crushed it, Josh. You crushed it.
Thank you, man. I do appreciate that. So Darius is, I loved your bio first off. I have to go into this because he's telling you all about who he is, which is really cool because most people are like, I'm a speaker. I'm an author. I've done all this stuff. But Darius is like, yeah, I'm a husband, father. Love my life. Oh yeah. And by the way, he just throws it in there. He was at number 40 on the Inc. 500 CEO list, which is not a simple accomplishment by any means. So this guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to scaling and growing a business. So I'm really excited to have him share his take with us about how to scale his business, a new business in 90 days. So Darius, I'm just going to present the question to you. So if you only had 90 days to build a business that provided an income for your family, a livable income, what would you do from day one to day 90? And if you had to start from scratch.
So, when you're starting from scratch, the way I see it is you don't have any time to figure out a product. You don't have any time to figure out scale model. You don't have any, well, you have to get straight to sales, right? And so a lot of the things that people take a lot of time to do is figure out product market fit. A lot of things people do is figure out how they want to, you know, approach the sale. A lot of things they do is figure out how they want to get clients. You don't have that time in 90 days. So the way I see it is you have to do something that you've already made, like know how to make money doing. And that could be something you were an employee in. That could be something you've done before where you've made money, but you don't have that flexibility to figure that stuff out. So for me, that is exactly what I did in my first business. In fact, the funny thing was I actually made a bet with what became my business partner. So I started my first business, the Inc. 500 business, Twin Capital Mortgage. I was 25 years old. I started it July 1st, 2003. And by September 30th, the business brought in almost $100,000 of revenue. So that was 90 days. That's exactly what that was. Now, what was funny was I had told my brother, who was going to be, twin is the key word. He was my twin brother. So the name of the business is Twin Capital Mortgage. and so I said, he wasn't in the business for those 90 days. He was not my business partner. So when I decided to do it, I said, hey, I want you to be my business partner. He said, well, why would I be your business partner? Because at the time he was in the mortgage business too. And we were both selling loans for different companies. He worked for a company in Southern California. I worked for a company in Northern California. And I had decided based on what I was doing that I could do it for myself. And so I said, hey, why don't you move up here and be my business partner? And he said, well, why would I do that? I'm making twice as much money as you are. And he was making at the time about $30,000 a month, which is a lot of money. This is a long time ago. So it's even more money, right? And I was making, I don't know, call it 12 or 15 grand a month. He said, well, I'm making like twice as much money as you are. Why would I leave my job to come start a business with you? That's insane. And I said, well, I have a bet for you. I said, the month I make more money than you do, you have to quit your job and move to San Francisco from Orange County and be my business partner. And you have to break up with your fiance. and so I got after it, and I did what I knew. I had at my previous business, I had a telemarketer. I was processing my own loans, and I was, you know, basically just doing exactly what I did. So my whole take on this is, if you want to have a business that's making money within 90 days, go do something you know right away, and go start selling right away. Because you don't have time. And then unless your sales cycle is a 1-day sales cycle, then maybe you have a little bit, you maybe have a little flexibility. A mortgage is a 30 to 60 day sales cycle. So for me, I just started selling day one because I just did something I already knew. And so I didn't have to figure out product market fit. It was just a matter of executing on what I had already known and got really focused. And so it worked out pretty well. $100,000 is more than $30,000. And October 1st, he drove his car up and he broke up with his fiance and showed up in San Francisco to be my business partner. So it was awesome.
That fiance hates you to this day, I'm sure.
uh, She knew I hated her, so it was
the feeling. So it was okay. The feeling is usual.
Yeah. It was all good.
That is awesome. Well, yeah, and that's a really cool take, because what it comes down to with your method, you're saying, don't go learn something. Don't go figure out, hey, is the market going to be interested in this? You're saying, just do something you know that will sell. There's already a demand for it. Make the money.
If you have to make money, yeah. I didn't say that you're going to love what you're selling. I didn't say that you're going to enjoy your job 10 years from now. But if the answer is that you need to make money to feed your family in 90 days, you don't have time to figure out product market fit. You don't have time to figure out scale. So you just got to go do what you know.
Right. Well, and I got to ask you this question too, because, you know, I think it fits really well with what you're talking about. I think the big confusion that people have when they start their first business is like, okay, is this, I've got to make $1 million company, or I've got to make what I call the legacy businesses, you know? And the reality is, your first business doesn't need to be, you know, a multimillion dollar company. It needs to be enough to cover your butt so you don't have to work a job anymore. And so for you, as far as like with like a legacy, because you've built a company and you had what, 1,000 employees, over 1,000 employees.
Yeah. So the first company I built was Twin Capital, and we built that to, that was the 40th fastest growing company in the United States for Inc. 500. This is back before there was Inc. 5,000. If you're 501, you didn't get a participation medal. Sorry. I say that, some people are like, screw you, man, I'm number 1200. I'm like, well, back then you would have been nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Good job. You built a company.
Yeah. Back then you would have been a guy that got a thank you letter with no award. you had to have a really high growth company back then to get on it. That business unfortunately was a subprime mortgage lender. And so, which is one of the reasons we grew so fast. But it's also, when I went to the Inc. 500 conference, I became the 40th fastest shrinking company in the United States. I went from 150 to 10 employees in 90 days. Oh. So yeah, most entrepreneurs don't like talking about their failures. I love talking about failures because that's where you learn everything. My next business was The Money Source. And I grew that from 2013 till I exited it less than a year ago. It's still around, like they're running, it's growing like crazy still. But that grew from, when I got there, there was 30 employees, and we grew to 1,000 in 36 months. And I left the business, and it was a great company. But yeah, that's, and I would even argue that's not my legacy company. You know, I'm young. I started in business when I was really young. So I'm 42 years old, which for some people might sound old, but trust me, when you get here, you'll feel really young. You'll be like, I was 20 not that long ago. I think time doubles in speed as every 10 years. So the last time I checked, I was 30. And when I was 30, last time I checked, I was 17. So it's not like when you're 10, when you go from 5 to 10, that's a long doubling.
Right.
It's not long when you're going from 30 to 40. But yeah, no, I think that, look, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. That's my answer to that. If you're trying to start a business and have control of your own destiny and not have to have a boss, well, then doing your dream business may be an option that you don't want to like waste your time on. If you would just want the financial freedom and the pain. I mean, listen, starting a business is, like I said before, rarely do people talk about their failures. You know who talks about their failures? People who are successful. You know, there's a really cool quote. It's that, you know, it's that failure is an orphan and that success is many fathers. Right. And so, but I do think that if the end goal is to get to just not work for the man, then for me, it's picking something I'm going to enjoy doing, because you're going to be working your freaking tail off. And it's going to be you got to enjoy doing it. You got to be working in your strengths. I mean, you want my full blown answer on this?
Yeah. Be blunt, man.
Okay. I'm going to give you the full blown answer. This is really simple. I call this the fulfillment formula, which by the way, is probably the name of my next book. So I just wrote a book called The Core Value Equation. I believe, which I believe undoubtedly, that your core values are the foundation for scale in any business when they're utilized the right way. My book walks through how I did that in this business. When I grew from 30 to 1,000 employees in 3 years, it wasn't because I was like smart. It was because I had figured out the key to scale, which is leveraging core values for me and for many people I've worked with and taught who are other CEOs. And so I believe that there's a formula for fulfillment, and that's there's three things that are involved in it. And this is the formula. It's a fraction, and it goes like this. Strengths. So you figure out what your strengths are. There's a cool tool called Strength Finder that I love. So you go figure out your strengths, or what are your talents? It's your talents and your strengths. Figure out what they are. Go work in them and measure yourself against them. Are you working in your strengths and talents 100% of the time, 50% of the time, 10% of the time? But when we're working in our strengths 100% of the time, and we combine that with our values. So we're working in our strengths and in our values. And the more we're doing that, the better we are. So it's 0% to 100% on each one of those. And you can kind of grade yourself as you do the work to figure out what are your strengths and what are your values. And usually there's, you know, in Strength Finder, they give you your top five strengths. So you could go figure those out. In values, I used to say, like to say that you want to learn your top 3 to 5 strengths. My book walks you through how to do that. And you divide that by what I call MEDS, M-E-D-S. And MEDS stands for, it's an acronym that stands for awareness. And MEDS is a combination of meditation, exercise, diet, and sleep. And then you rate yourself on those four areas. Are you doing some sort of practice around focus and awareness and experiencing the life that's in front of you, not being unfocused? Are you exercising, doing something to like take care of your health? Are you eating the right foods, giving yourself the right fuel to be here, to be present? And are you sleeping to recharge your batteries and do it all over again the next day? The higher you, and I do that as basically up to one, you know, it's a full fraction, 100%, and less than that, you know, so it's one. And the higher the number, it's the biggest number. I'm still figuring out how to quantify this, but basically I want to be 100% on strengths. I want to be 100% on awareness, and I want to be 100% on my values. And when I'm doing those three things, I'm living a very fulfilled life. And what I say is if you can, the bottom part of the fraction, MEDS, doesn't matter what you're doing. Like, you could do a job you hate. If you're doing those four things, then you'll just be doing a job you hate really well. But if you can find a business that aligns your strengths, your values, and you come fully aware and fully ready to kick ass every day, then you're going to live a very fulfilled life.
Yeah. Well, and so really what you're saying with that is it's that's how you identify the company that you want to build, if I'm understanding correctly.
Yeah. Look, like, there's a friend of mine that does a thing called, you know, my book's about the core values, which is the how. Simon Sinek talks about the why. But he says, if you really want to have a business you love, you got to do it. Know your why, know why you're doing it. I say, know how you're going to do it through your values. And his is pick a product, the what, that you care about. And so it doesn't have to be the end all be all. And he used the example of, let's say you love chocolate, but you work in a coffee shop. You may not love coffee. So are you really going to show up and make the best cup of coffee every day when you really just want to make chocolate all day long? So I will tell you this. I built two very, very successful businesses in an industry I didn't really love. And at the end of the day, I got really good at it and it paid me very, very well. And then I left after 20 years. I just retired from the industry at 42. I never loved the product, but I liked building businesses and that got me going until it didn't. So, and now I'm on the next part, which is legacy, which is what we're talking about. So if I'm a new entrepreneur, which I'm assuming this is geared towards, or a less experienced entrepreneur, if you have the luxury of picking a product you love, and there's a friend of mine does a thing with this. He goes, is it something you enjoy doing that the market needs that they'll pay you for? Right? So that's kind of the trifecta. And that goes back to my fulfillment formula a little bit. But so, because you could love doing something and the market doesn't think it's valuable. And I would say, don't do that business. That's a hobby, right? But if it's something you love doing that people want and the market will pay you with margin on it, dude, jump after it. You know, you'll never work another day in your life, you know? Or you'll end up hating pizza, you know, if you're...
Yeah.
You know, in my bio, you're joking about my bio. I say, you know, I'm all about the four P's: passions, pizza, puzzles, and pink unicorns. And so I'll never start a pizza shop. I love making pizzas, but I don't want to run a restaurant. I love it. I'm telling you, man, I might actually enjoy running a pizza shop when I'm like bored and old and like I'm not doing it for money. And it doesn't matter if the thing loses money and my friends show up and we get drunk together and eat pizza all day. And it's just like Darius's little pizza shop on the corner. Sure. But that's not a business.
Right.
You know,
that's a hobby.
A hobby. Right. But for some people, they might not feel the same way. They might want to run a restaurant. I have a friend that she would kill someone to build a restaurant. She's been trying to do it for years. So you got to want to do it. You got to want to run the business. And my take is the product is less important until it's important. If you can find it, if you can do something and the product is something you could support and everything else lines up, then yeah, start the business. But if you love the product, it's even better.
Yeah. Love that. When, and I think what you're hitting on there too is when it comes down to it, as you're choosing that business, most people are like, oh, I'm so passionate about this. And so they try to sell like a $10 product with it, you know, like a book or something. And in my opinion, I'd like to get your opinion on this. I don't think you should ever start with a low ticket product, personally, but it's, I want to hear your take on it.
Just depends. You know, anyone can make money doing anything. So yes and no. I'll use myself as an example. I just launched my book. I have no list. I have no followers except my friends. I have literally nothing, right? I sold $100,000 worth of books in 2 months, which most people like blows their freaking mind when I tell them that, right? So most people are like, you sold $100,000 worth of books in 60 days. Why don't you go sell another 100,000? I'm like, cause I ran out of friends to call. You know, it's not scalable. So it's not a great business, but it did its job. I took that $100,000 and I've now invested it in building a course that's going to be a high ticket course. I took it and built my website. Cause I was like, you know, and it's not that I didn't have the money to build all that stuff. I just viewed it like a business. I'm like, I'm not putting more money into this thing. Like I need to raise money. So I went, got 70 companies to be flagship sponsors and bought all the books for their employees. And so it just depends. Like what, like I have friends that have killed it in low margin businesses because they had a better process. They had great technology. They had a brain for it. There's a guy I know that's company might go public, $16 billion SPAC that 10 years ago, 12 years ago was nothing. And it's a low margin mortgage company called United Wholesale Mortgage. You've never heard of them before. They're the number two largest originator in the entire country.
Wow.
Super, super low margin, super high volume. They make a quarter of what most people make, but he perfected the machine. So if you want to do a low margin business, you better have a better mousetrap than everybody else. I'm with you. I love big margin. I love it. Like, because it gives me wiggle room to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And the more wiggle room, the better. And what I always tell people with a business is it's going to cost you more time, more money, and more effort than you expect. Take what you expect, multiply it by 5 to 10. That's the real number. Yeah. And so, by the way, if that's the real number, then you need to have some margin of error on your you know, on your revenue side,
right?
You know, and your expense side, because everyone goes into it thinking they're going to crush it. No one ever starts a business being like, man, I can't wait till this fails. But 99% of businesses fail. It's some crazy number, right?
Yeah,
it really is. It's over 90% for sure. I think in a 10 years time, it's like 98% of businesses fail. So like if I told you day one, it's like there's a 98% chance of what you're doing is going to fail, or 95%, even 90%. Would you do it? The answer is no, but everyone does it because they think they're going to be that 10% that does succeed. I've been on both sides of that. I've had lots of businesses that have failed, and I've had, you know, I'm only talking about the ones that I crushed it at. Well, right. I don't even remember half the names of the ones that failed, right? Like you always forget those ones. Like Darius, which ones failed? I don't remember a lot of them. Like the
a lot of them don't even get out of idea hardly.
Oh yeah, I make fun of them. When I can remember the names of them, I make fun of them, right? but no one ever talks to me about my businesses. No one talks to me about my first business that failed that I lost $100,000 at. That I'm not talking about that. I told you about the first one that was Inc. 500.
Right.
You know, I didn't tell you about the one before that when I was in college and was doing multi-level marketing out of my dorm room. When I broke even on it, it was cool. I spent $2,000. I made $2,000. Right. But the whole point is there's a high chance of failure. So to your point, I think it's you don't want to go in there on a low margin business unless you really have some secret sauce around process, technology, some IP, some skill set, something, you know. But even then it's like, there's a quote I love. You ever heard of a guy named Adeo Rezi?
Look him up.
You ever heard of a guy named Elon Musk?
Yes.
Yeah, he was Elon Musk's roommate in college.
Oh, really?
And he runs this thing called the Founders Institute, which is an incubator out of Silicon Valley. And so I almost tried quitting the mortgage industry in 2011. That was the first time I tried escaping. And right when I got out, they got me back in, which ended up being very successful. It ended up leading to the big success I had with the Money Source. But I was in this, so I tried going into tech for a hot minute. And I did this incubator. I had this idea. This is back when I don't know if you remember, there was this, what's it called? Living Social and Groupon. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Right. So this is like in the 2010, like those coupon businesses were really hot, right? The deal companies. So yeah. I had this really cool idea. This is a company, by the way, that we're not talking about here today. My company that failed. It was called Deelix, Deelyx. And it was an exchange for deals. Like a business could go on, put it on the exchange, and then you would, like, all these deal companies would come and bid on it and they take it. Because back then they were hiring people out of like the Yellow Pages, which half your listeners are like, what are the Yellow Pages? that was where you went to go find stuff when the internet was before the internet. And so I'm 42, which means I'm young enough to have, the internet came out when I was in high school. I had an AOL account, but I'm old enough where there was no internet when I was in high school too. And so I'm like the first gen, I'm Gen X. I'm the first gen where there was internet. So the Yellow Pages, we used to do that when we wanted to look something up. We didn't Google it. We went on the Yellow Pages to look it up. And so they were hiring these guys out of yellowpages.com, which had converted to a digital platform, to go sell advertising to these like mom and pop businesses to offer deals. Right. So I was like, no, there's gotta be a better way. We're going to do a platform and people will just come and buy the deals off of it. So I joined the Founders Institute, and Adeo Rezi says something that I'll never forget. He said, "There's margin in mystery," which I love that quote. There's margin in mystery. So when I think of a business, I always go, how much mystery is there in this business? And if there's no mystery, I'm less interested, right? And there's different ways of creating mystery. Like, let's use the clothing line that you Gen Ys and Gen Zers will appreciate, this, like Supreme. Yeah, see, I'm cool enough where I know what Supreme is and I knew what the Yellow Pages are. Like, there's very few people on earth that can say that. So Supreme is selling like $250 t-shirts, right? It's not because that t-shirt's that great. Like, it's not made out of like gold threads, right? It's because it has the word Supreme on it. So the mystery is that's a cool brand, right? So branding can create mystery. But when you start a business, you don't have that. You have no brand equity. So you can't lean on that. But there's margin and mystery. And so I always look at business and I go, where's the mystery? That's one of the questions I always ask. And if I don't see mystery, I go, oh, that's commoditized. The opposite of mystery is commodity. And in a commoditized business, just know you're going to have margin compression. People will come and compete on price. In a service business, the mystery might be your skill set, right? My pizzas, by the way, taste so darn good that the mystery is, how do I get them to taste so amazing, right? Really good products have some mystery in their quality sometimes because of the craftsmanship of them. So what's the margin of mystery? So I know it's a long-winded answer. I like high margin businesses, or I like very predictable cash flow in my business. So an example of that might be like a laundromat. You know, like, that's probably not going to change. Clothes aren't going to magically start washing themselves. Even with AI, it's not going to happen, you know? The disruptiveness of washing clothes, I can't see it. There's not going to be like spotless clothes that like wash themselves. So like, I can buy that business and I can go in and say, okay, I know that business is going to create X amount of dollars. It has for the last 5 years. It probably will for the next 5 years. I don't see the disruption in it. So I always I kind of look at this stuff. And what I would say is this, and you know, I'm kind of in the stage of my life where it's, if I'm going to do a business, I'm probably going to buy a company. I'm going to buy a business, which, if you're starting a business, you should kind of have the same mindset, which is, would you buy this business if you had the money to buy it? And if the answer is no, then you probably shouldn't start that business. So I think people spend, and listen, I'm guilty of it as ever. There's a reason why we're hearing about my failures and I'm talking about my failures, and they're not on my LinkedIn profile, by the way. Like, you don't have
failed in business 25 times.
yeah. You don't, I don't have like, I don't have my loser businesses on LinkedIn. Like, it would be, what? I don't remember you doing that. Yeah. I kept it under wraps. like you do, you just don't remember because it didn't last that long. The other thing is if you have a business that's not working, I have a favorite saying, which is don't be afraid to put a bullet in its head as quickly as possible. Like Deelix is a good example. I started Deelix in, I don't know, February. Dude, I blew that its head off by July. I was five grand into it, killed it. I had another company called The Debt Store. It was back when they used to, this is during the Great Recession, they was doing debt settlement. And I started it, I got it, I probably went, I don't know, 30, 40 grand into the hole. I got it up to, I was 100 grand in the hole in that one. I got it, I just tested. I built about $100,000 book of business out of it. I saw there were some things I didn't like about it, put a bullet in its head 9 months later. Right. So I'm not afraid to put a bullet in the head of a business. And what a lot of people do is they get married to their business. They go, oh, but I've worked so hard. Here's this really great piece of advice that your mom's not going to say to you. Nobody cares. The gods of business, by the way, don't care if you fail. They know the chances of you fail. Dear business God, am I going to fail? Probably.
Right.
Dear business God, would you do anything to help me? Nope. Dear business God, can you give me some good luck? Maybe if I feel like it, but probably not. The business gods laugh at us when we fail. So like no, and nobody cares except you and your mom. Your friends don't care. Like they care a little bit, but not that much.
They care about you. They don't care about your business.
No. Half my friends were stoked when my business failed because they got to have me back. You know, like they're like, oh, you were such a jerk when your business was doing well. And I'm like, I was just working hard. Leave me alone. So nobody cares that your business is going to fail except you, especially the business gods. They're laughing at you. So don't get married to your business. Your business doesn't care about you. Just know that. So I have a very promiscuous relationship with my businesses. Like I don't care. I care about them as much as they care about me.
Right. But so one of the things I want to ask you about that too, you know, is as you're building out companies that way, a lot of it comes down to your, I would say like your disconnection from it is saying it's a business. It's not my legacy, right? You're like, you're not, how do you put it this way? Most people that I work with, they typically are like, yeah, this is my life. This is my legacy. It's got to work. This is my one chance, you know? And I just, yeah, I just don't believe in that either.
Well, I mean, so I have a mentor named Vern Harnish. I don't know if you know him. He wrote Scaling Up, Master of Rockefeller Habits. And I talk about him in my book because I did a program with him at MIT, which is for high growth entrepreneurs. It used to be called Birthing of Giants. Now it's called the Entrepreneur Masters Program. It's through Entrepreneurs Organization. And I was talking to him last year around this time, right when I was writing my book, and he said something that I love. It's a quote that I love, which is, you can be rich or you can be king, you know, and everyone gets so stuck on being king. Like, what legacy are you talking about? Are you Richard Branson? Like, nobody cares about your business. I hate to say it, but there, you know, unless you have a really like profound business, and I mean like profound, like Elon Musk or like Branson or like, you know, Steve Jobs, you know, that unless it's a really, really big business, there is no legacy. You know, your kids aren't going to run it that well, more than likely. They're going to probably sell it when you're dead. You know, and you're going to have to do a lot of work to groom the next generation to run your business. And do you even want to do that? You know, most people, very few people have run legacy businesses. Most people, like most entrepreneurs, I rarely meet entrepreneurs that are like building it for my kids and they're going to run it and then their kids are going to run it. I actually have never met someone that said that to me yet. I've met the kids who are running the parents' business who are like, dude, all I'm trying to do is automate this so I can just go hang out.
Right.
You know, like that's what those are some of my friends. But yeah, most people I meet, it's build, scale, sell, rinse, wash, repeat, right? Until you have enough money where you just say, no, I'm cool. I'm going to go hang out, you know? So that's with most entrepreneurs, that's the goal. Like if you want to start a little cafe, I doubt if your kids are watching you slave in the cafe, I doubt they're going to be like, man, I can't wait till I run that cafe.
Right.
I'm a good example of that. My dad owned gas stations. I worked at my dad's gas station from age 10 to 18. That was my summer vacation. By the way, if you want to teach your kids how to A, hate working at gas stations, and B, have a good work ethic, go buy a gas station and make them spend their summers there. So I did that, cleaning up gas station bathrooms, which, by the way, is like go clean your own bathroom. Now imagine it's public. Okay. Just go spend 5 minutes in a gas station bathroom and imagine cleaning it. And then imagine you're 10. Okay. That changes the way you think about a lot of things. What do you think I thought when my dad was like, I'm building this for you? I was like, F this.
You can have it back, man.
I was like, you shouldn't.
I don't want
like,
it.
I'm not running that business. So like this idea around legacy business, I think is a fantastical dream. And I don't think it's the right way to approach a business unless you really do have truly a big, large legacy business. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm saying the odds are that won't happen. Because if your business does get big enough, someone's going to want to pay you a multiple for it. You know, so if I've said, hey, man, your business makes $1 million a year in income, I'm going to pay you 10 times earnings. I'm going to pay you 10 mil. Oh, and by the way, when you make your $1 million of earnings, which is a lot of money, like I'm talking about a business, most of the listeners are like, I'd love to have a business that made $10 million a year or $1 million a year in profit. And some guy comes up and says, hey, Joe Schmo, I'm going to pay you 10 times earnings for your business because it's such an awesome business. And you know, when you make your million now, you got to give half to the government in ordinary income tax. But when you sell it in a capital gains transaction, you keep 8 million. So that's what, 500 grand after tax, 8 million, you know, that's 16 times, that's 16 years of revenue, right? I'm sorry, of profit, after tax profit.
Right.
Like that's 2 decades of your life. And you're like, no, I'm going to stay here and grind away. Sorry, I don't believe it. I know you won't do it. You'll sell it. Very few of you won't. So why are we talking about legacy? It's just, I think it's unusual. I think it's unrealistic. I think it's a wrong reason to be in a business.
Yeah, see, that's really intriguing to hear your perspective on it. So where would you put like writing a book in that, right? Because a lot of people consider that kind of like a legacy, like it's building your legacy, but would you even consider it a business or do you say, hey, it's more of a, like a branding thing?
It depends on, I always answer your questions the same way. It depends.
That's why you're here, man.
it can be a marketing piece for the business. A lot, most authors, that's what it is.
Right.
So I wrote it through this publisher called Lion's Crest, which is owned by Scribe Media. Scribe Media, the founder is Tucker Max. I don't know if you know him.
Uh-huh.
So he wrote a really popular book last decade called I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, sold 4.5 million copies of it. So the guy's really, really smart guy when it comes to publishing, and he's a friend of mine. And so I was talking to Tucker about this. And I said, well, you know, don't people write books the same reason I did, for legacy? He goes, no. I said, no, that's a very small percentage of people. Most people write them because if you're a nonprofit or a business author, most people are writing the books because it is a really expensive business card.
Right.
It's the, it like when I bust out, oh, author, you know, like you automatically get credibility out of it. It could be a terrible book, by the way, but but most people don't write books. Right. And everyone, I don't care who you are. Everyone wants to write a book.
Right.
Everyone wants a book written. They don't want to do the work to write a book because it's a total pain in the rear end to write a book. But I love writing a book. I thought it was fun. And so for me, I think, yes, my reason for writing a book was pure legacy. I was like, I figured this thing out in business that I think every business owner should know. I wish I had this book when I was starting off. I would have shot someone to have read this book. It would have changed my life. It would have made my businesses grow better. It would have made my first business, which was the Inc. 500 business, which, by the way, the first sentence of my book was, I hate this company. I'm talking about that business. You know? I swear to God, I'll read you the first sentence. Do you mind?
Go for it. Do it.
I'll read it. It's so funny. Last night, my best friend from high school, we were kind of jokers. He reads the first 150 words of my book in this like dramatic fashion. So I videotaped and sent it to me. So I videotaped myself reading it, and then I posted it on Facebook and I said, "Who read it best?" And it's like, and it's super funny. So then I had this idea, and I might do it, is I'm going to hire people on Cameo who are semi-famous to read the first like paragraph of my book. And right. Then I'm going to do a who read it best between like me and like Hulk Hogan. I swear to God, this is like what I was working on before I got on this show. I hate this company, I said to myself, sitting in the office in San Francisco. I can't believe I created this, right? This is the business that was the 40th fastest growing company in the United States. That's how I felt about it after it already hit that mark. So, sorry, I forgot the question.
You're good. No, it's like the power of like the book and you know what you're using it for. You already answered it pretty well. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think a book is a way better legacy than a business, for sure, without question. I do a live stream show called The Greatness Machine, which is ridiculousness. I have so much fun. You should come on my show. We'll chop it up. It's R-rated though. I will tell you that. but it is like Joe Rogan meets like, I don't know, like some guy on acid, you know, like it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun on that show. It's Joe Rogan business show essentially. And we do a lot of good stuff on there. That's a better legacy item because that's something I'll be dead and gone. And my great grandkids, I know we're going to watch that show and be like, my great grandfather was a maniac. You know, I can't believe we talked to all those cool people. Those are legacy items. A business? There's a book called What Would the Rockefellers Do that Garrett Gunderson wrote. Go read that book. You'll feel very different about your legacy when you read that book, which is your grandkids don't care and your kids don't either. So do it for yourself. Build a business. Do it for wealth. If you can build a business that's going to change the world, do it for that reason. But if you're trying to do it for the next generation, I think you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Awesome. Love that answer. Well, so, you know, Darius, we're coming up to the end of the interview here. So I want to ask you two final questions. The first one is, where can people connect with you, find your book and all that?
Well, so the book is on all online, Audible. It's on Kindle. It's on Nook. It's paperback, hardback. I spared no format. So you can, and I will say this, people are going to see the video. If you're going to see the video, this is the hardback. The hardback is beautiful. So I did these black end sheets. It's got a soft touch to it. It's really cool. There's a guy named John Rulin. Do you know John Rulin from Giftology?
Yeah.
So Rulin's, he's who introduced me to Tucker. He has a really beautiful book. And he and I talked about this. I said, if you're going to make a book, make it really beautiful. So the hardback is really beautiful. I really love, a lot of people have given me a lot of compliments. So if you like hardback books, my hardback book is a really nice hardback book. Anywhere online, just Google The Core Value Equation. But Amazon, obviously, if you get on Amazon, I appreciate reviews if you like the book. But for me, my central hub is therealdarius.com. Thereal, R-E-A-L, Darius, D-A-R-I-U-S.com. And on there, you could find my live stream, which is The Greatness Machine. You could buy the book. It'll take you to all the links for buying the book. You can connect with me. And that's the best place. Follow me. You could follow me there. Subscribe to my newsletter. I don't spam. I'm all about giving value. I like this interview is like the type of content I like to give. I have a very provocative way of talking about things. So, and I have very, very strong opinions. So you might hate my opinions. And if you do, I don't mind. But I feel very strongly about all my opinions, good, bad, or indifferent.
I love that. And honestly, I think that's why you've been so successful is polarity is so key. And I think most people are scared of doing that, but it actually attracts more people to you. So Darius, my final question for you, man, if you could leave one final thought for our audience, say, okay, if this is the one takeaway you could take away from this entire interview, what would that be?
I mean, I'm going to shamelessly self-promote right now because I didn't get to say this and it's on like the first sentence of my website. I believe that every result in our life, good, bad, or indifferent, starts and ends with our core values. And I believe that because it's intangible, most people don't know how to utilize that as a tool for really creating amazing results.
Right.
And my book basically decodes that. So it's like the secret to life as far as I'm concerned. Is getting really, really clear on your core values, like to a point where it's like, if I said, hey, what are your core values? You're like, boom, 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 boom. How do you use them? Boom, 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 boom. When you can do that with your core values, the world, your life changes. And for me, it's been a life changer. And for people I know that have discovered this, their life has changed dramatically. So I do think everything starts and ends with core values. And for me, that's that all of our results in our life are a materialization of the values in which we live.
Love that. Well, so go make sure everybody that you buy the book, The Core Value Equation. And on top of that, make sure you just go check out the website, The Real Darius. Honestly, this is going to be a place where you can, like you said, get real true value instead of being spammed to death. So make sure you go check that out. And Darius, thanks for coming on Rocking the Mic, man.
Oh, pleasure was all mine.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode of the Lucky Titan Podcast. If you want to fill your favorite platform with dream customers, then come join myself and thousands of others of hosts at theluckytitan.com/tribe. Here you can find guests for your show, get featured on other shows, and discover the secrets to building an audience of raving fans. So once again, go create your free account at theluckytitan.com/tribe.